Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and every Wednesday at noon you can listen to American Tennis on the UR Tennis Network. Just go to your iPhone and download that podcast for the UR Tennis Network, the letter U, the letter R, number 10, the letter S, Network. Every Monday, Lisa Stone has a fantastic Parenting Aces program. It's become quite popular. And then 2 hours from right now, 2 o'clock Eastern Time, 1 o'clock Central Time, Jason Haynes has his College Connection show, and you can listen to what some of the top coaches in the land have to say on that very interesting show. Want to also let you know, every Tuesday, We Coach Tennis, J.P. Weber has a very entertaining show at noon as well, and you can get that on Blog Talk Radio as well, or just go to your iPhones again, UR Tennis Network. American Tennis, we're here to talk about just that, American Tennis, what's going on. Each week, we try to address different issues on the front lines of American tennis and what is going on. We always say our mission is for you. That's each and everybody in the United States that has some skin in the game to stand up and to speak out and say what they want to about American tennis. Edmund Burke's statement, I always start by saying that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. And it's not just evil. All that it takes for neutrality, all that it takes for in-between stuff, or all that it takes for apathy to happen is for good men or good women to do nothing. I give talks at my camp all summer long about not being a tweener. You have wimpies, winners, wieners, which are tweeners and winners. Wimpies, whiners, wieners, and winners. And you can make of that what you would like to. I've got the loaded language on my mind again, as we had Alex Slezak last week and the week before Ryan Young. We're talking about loaded language and how important it is used with kids, because then they remember it, but also how meaningful it is to us as we go through the years and it becomes so applicable. But your job is to stand up and speak out. Mine is too, but let's do it in a way that addresses issues not people, and no one can find fault. Call in today, area code 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. We want your opinions. We want your comments. We want your questions. My website is chuckcreasy.net, and K-R-I-E-S-E, where you can get my blogs, every radio show that we've done over the past 2 years. And then also my books are there, and my camp information, TotalTennisTraining.com, is the website, but you can also get it at ChuckCreasy.net. Now in our 38th summer, just winding up, and I am in Atlanta, Georgia, doing a camp, and I've got sitting next to me a wonderful man that I've had the privilege of working with the last 7 years, Coach Dan Vonk. Coach Vonk, it's great to have you on once again.
Thanks, Chuck. Always look forward to it.
Yeah, and well, we could tell the great story about how we've met but and things and all those, but I've had you on 3 or 4 times to talk about small-town tennis USA and about basically in-the-trench tennis. I don't want us to say grassroots. I want to say in the trenches, because we want to talk about small-town tennis USA. 72% of all professional athletes come from small towns. Is that surprising to you, such a statistic?
It is. It is. The first time that you mentioned that to me, it was a little surprising to me. And it's you know, something that I've thought about. We consider ourselves a blue-collar tennis program because, you know, we have to create a lot of our own opportunities there and everything, but we have great kids, and, you know, if we can build it, they will come sometimes.
Yeah, and it really is, and I guess I've got my own opinions why great athletes come out of small towns mainly. I mean, but I know in promoting tennis events, if you promote a tennis event in New York or L.A. or big towns, they bomb because there's too many circuses in town at the same time. You go to a town like a Montgomery, Alabama. You go to a town like a Sumter, South Carolina, that's growing like crazy with their events. You go to a Rock Hill, South Carolina. You go to a Bloomington, Indiana. You know, these just the towns, 50,000 to 100,000 people, and it takes off. But your opinion on that statistic, real quick, Dan. Why do you believe so many great athletes come out of small towns?
Well, you know, again, that was surprising to me because you'd think in the urban areas that they have a lot more opportunities and they have a lot more competition and everything. But I think maybe we're a little bit hungrier. I think I think maybe we got some country kids or small town kids that are bred to work hard, and I don't know why that is, to be honest with you, but it is a very interesting stat.
I believe in all of those, but here's the thing that most people don't think about. They haven't been to the circus yet. They haven't been to the show, and they don't know quite how hard it is. Might be part of the deal. I've always said that you keep fog on top of the mountain until the kids are too high up to turn back. Do you think maybe this is true? You know, they say exposure in a big city, but a lot of times exposure in a big city, I mean, if you grew up in New York and go see the Knicks play, you might say, whoa, wait a minute, I can't be a basketball player. Or if you grow up in a town where you've got 15 pro athletes there, a lot of times you might get scared. What thoughts do you have there?
I think that's probably true. You know, it's something where we get a kid, for instance, in tennis, if my kid is the best tennis player in our community or in our area and stuff, they think they're the top dog. But when you do show them that next level, and you know they're willing to work a little bit harder, I think, to get to that next level. Although it is harder, you know, it might be difficult in the sport of tennis because they're going to have to want it. But yeah, if you show them too much, I agree that they might say, oh, I'll never get
there. Well, here's my coaching tip about that is two things. You keep fog on top of the mountain until the kids are too high up to turn back. But you only feed them the meals at the right time and the right amount that they're able to digest. In other words, you got to bring them along sort of next step. Now, you might tease them with a great journey out ahead. But I think it's real important, whether it's old saying that a journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step, and the step at a time, you keep the step. When my players used to run the stadium, Dan, that was so high, it was a big old stadium at Clemson, I used to have them run. I said, if you look at the top, it will defeat you. It's a monster. It will defeat you. But if you look at the step in front of you, you take one step at a time, and you will be surprised what you can accomplish.
I think that's true. I think in relating to that, one of the big things that we have to overcome in small town tennis or rural tennis or whatever it is that you want to call it is that we have to have some sort of a community person whose job it is to help show them that next level or to provide the opportunities for that next level. In a lot of communities such as mine, you have people who are high school coaches that have a full-time job besides being the tennis coach. And maybe one of the directions that we need to go is to make sure that we've got somebody in the community through a recreation department or a community tennis association or something who understands that that's one of the roles that we need them to develop as a community organizer type of a place or thing to help provide those next level opportunities for our juniors.
Right, and thus this program started to take roots. Small Town Tennis USA started to take roots, and tonight, this summer, was the first trial run of Small Town Tennis USA, and that's what we want to talk about. But I want to go back to something about only eating the meals that are in front of you and not showing them the top of the mountain until they're ready to take that step. Here's the problem. In small towns today, you have the internet just like everybody else. You have the cell phones. You have all of these things going on that expose the kids to maybe much more than they've ever seen. And not only does it scare them if they see too much too soon, it might inspire them, it might scare them, but it's sort of what I've always said and I dislike about rankings a lot of times, and I like ranking the very, very top players, okay? But rankings are like bus stops. Rankings are like stopping places, too. Everybody thinks, hey, if I'm 400, I'm going to want to be 300, then I'm going to want to be 3, and then I want to be 1. That's not what happens. If you rank the top 25 or 40 kids, you have an opportunity, and sorry about the noise here, folks, in our studio today. We've got work happening right outside. Anyhow, actually, we're doing it at the Tennis Center today, folks. I know you knew we weren't in a studio, Dan. I shouldn't be trying to put that one on. We're at the Tennis Center, and there's stuff going on outside. So anyhow, but what happens, too much reality too soon, really, it either inspires or clogs the dream. And, you know, if you keep your eye, you want to hear the loaded language my father used to say?
Sure.
So it's pretty simple, but he said, son, if you want to go after that, stay focused. He said, well, I want focus, and then he'd always have a rhyme. No matter what your aim in life, no matter what your goal, keep your eye upon the donut and not upon the hole. And I just go, it's the stupidest thing I ever heard, Dad. It's a stupid pop. It's dumb. You know, but you basically you've got to keep simple things, simple steps out in front of kids. So 72% of the athletes come from small towns. They can, a sport becomes the big deal to them. But now with the internet and these other things, they have instant access to what's going on in New York City. You can bring the country kid to the city just by touching a few buttons. And it's dangerous. It's good. I forget what Ryan Young said a couple weeks ago. He said the internet should give not easy. It should make things exciting, exhilarating. I forget what it should enlightening. It should enlighten, not make easy. Make you enlighten, not make easy. And so information's great until it starts making things easy or people get scared and so on and so forth. But Small Town Tennis USA. So when we come back from our commercial break, I do want to go in to watch the news of college tennis is right now, that because we've got Kalamazoo coming up and so many critical things. But I want to stay on track here, Dan. Talk about history of Small Town Tennis USA and what your role is in there and what the goal should be. Your trials, your challenges that you have in South Georgia and things. So go ahead. Yeah.
Well, you know, this is, as you know, this is an idea that you and I have batted around for a few years now, talking about the lack of opportunities that we have in small towns, basically. And we were talking about how we could overcome that. You and I decided to sit down with Dan Santorum of the PTR. I think we met in early April, if I'm remembering correctly. And we sat down with Dan and we proposed our idea of putting a college player, an intern, into small town communities and giving them kind of a summer responsibility where their job was to help us develop tennis in those small communities. We initially came up with the idea of doing a pilot program where we had three communities taking part. Mine was one of them in Camden County, Georgia, and there were a couple others in South Carolina. I forget the names of those. But we were going to try to place college players in three communities to work with our players. As it turned out, we ended up, I had somebody come down to Camden County, Georgia for 2 weeks this summer. We had hoped for more weeks than that, but it worked out. We had a good start. We got 2 weeks out of somebody, and they came down, and it just went over great. So it's a great idea still, I think. I think we need to expand on that and look at, you know, I know that we're going to sit down and talk later, hopefully with Dan, and we'll talk about how we need to tweak this and everything. But those 2 weeks provided a lot of opportunities. The kids that did participate loved it. They had a college player that they could relate to a little bit more than an old coach like me or somebody that they're so familiar with. And, you know, it's something that I definitely want to pursue. I think it's a great idea. This is what we need to do in order to promote tennis in small towns, where we get somebody during the summer months when we have the time, frankly, to do that. It was just a great experience and something I think we can definitely.
Well, learning happens on multiple fronts, it looks like. First of all, the college player, there's hundreds and hundreds of college players who've been in tennis their whole life, and they've had the whole array of lessons and training, and they've been to academies and things, and they've done all this tennis to this great crescendo called college tennis. But when they get to college tennis, if it fizzles, fazzles, and fades away, and we have so many kids just quit tennis right after their college career is over, they say, I'm going to get on with my real life. We're not talking about those that go out and play pros, the top 2%, 10%, we hope 10%. We're talking about the number five guy, the number six guy, the very dedicated number two or three guy as well that wants to make coaching a career. So what you do is, what the plan is to take these young athletes, male and female athletes, put them into a community, whether it's a Camden County, Georgia, or a Fulton County, Georgia, or, well, that's not a, that's a big, that's a big one. Okay,
yes,
that's how about Oconee County, South Carolina, Walhalla, and Westminster? How's that? And with that, put somebody there, hook them up with the community director, and say, have at it. Go get it done. And here's a critical thing. To empower that player to go out and to teach. And before any of you stop gasping here and say, well, what about the technical skills? What about the red, orange, and green program? What about all the things that they can be certified with? Look, if they're certified, fine. They can do my Total Tennis Training Certification Program. They can do the PTR program. They can read books. But basically, you want to develop a teacher, somebody that is in love kids. And what a what a shot of energy to the community. What a shot of energy.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, one of the things that that my hope was that this young college player, who at the level that they're at, they've been exposed to a lot of tennis throughout their lives through various junior programs, camps that they've gone to, hopefully a really good college coach like you, that they can come down to my community and they can infuse some energy, some different thoughts and ideas from what they've been exposed to through their tennis playing experience. I love for my kids to be exposed to different people. They can, you know, I certainly don't know it all. And in small towns, you know, my kids need all the resources that they can get. So to have somebody come down who has played high-level junior tournaments, has played a year or two of college tennis, has been exposed to different tennis opportunities when they were young, my goal was that they would come down and they would show the best drills, the best skills, drills, techniques, competitive situations, whatever you want to call it, that they've been exposed to that have helped them the most in their tennis career, and hopefully pass that on to my kids. One of the other things that I think some of my older kids really benefited from is having a current college player right there. For instance, I have a group of boys that participated in this who are seniors this year who really hadn't been thinking about playing college tennis. They had their minds set on maybe going to a bigger school, the University of Georgia or something like that. But they were able to sit down with a college player.
And join a fraternity and not have an active try to find friends and other things.
Right. And I think it was kind of a naturally occurring thing that happened where this college player came in and kind of injected them with a little bit of energy, and they're starting to think about maybe I can play college tennis someplace now. Maybe this is something that I can do in my future and prolong my tennis career. And, you know, there's so many benefits to kids in terms of learning about life and being part of a tennis program. They're doing something that they love, you know. And so I always tell my kids, you know, you get treated like a superstar for four more years if you play college tennis. It's just a great opportunity for them.
And the travel and the learning and all those things. And I cut off short earlier here, but again, the word you said there basically equates with hope. It gives kids hope, a vision, a dream. And as I said earlier, I was talking about rankings, and I sidetracked myself there. But rankings are good to a point, like Dan, like 30 or 40 or something like that. But what we need to do is have kids be able to shoot for things, like the middle-level kids need to be ratings, where kids are fighting for a higher rating. Hey, wait a minute. So-and-so is this rating, I can jump up if I do this work, and my rating is now this. Rankings are like bus stops that you get off of too many times, and I always will tell you the story of a parent that writes me the email about recruiting their son or their daughter, and they'll say, you know, my son was ranked 550 in the country 3 years ago, and now he's worked his way up to 375. And it's not like the coach goes, whoa, okay. Well, to the kid, he's climbed over 250 spots or something. And you're going, okay, son, that's not quite what we're after. Instead, we need ratings for our middle-level kids where they just said, hey, I was rated this, and now I'm rated this, and where it's accurate. You know, and I do take my hat off to Dave Fish and Dave Howe, who are working so hard on the universal tennis ratings. That'll help us a lot. But with the top 50, we need the kings. And then the entry level, we need basic, something like karate belts, which are the GRIPS program, I believe in so very, very much, that Aaron Fox and Craig Sagres, that they do. The GRIPS program, gripsprogram.com, check it out if you teach tennis. Best I've seen out there. But we're talking about hope for these small-town tennis USA kids. And we're talking about a method to get some help to them. So College kids need summer jobs. College kids want to stay in tennis. It's better than working in a factory and or shoveling something. And, you know, so they get to play tennis. If they have initiative and you cut them loose, they can make good stuff happen. They grow as leaders. They grow as men and women. And they have great impact on their community because they're close in age to these youngsters. They can identify. I think some of your youngsters were talking about that.
Yeah, yeah, they really like that.
With who? It's okay. Joe's in there in the program. The guy's name is Joe, and he did a fantastic thing. We always say address issues, not people, but we do need to address some good things that happen with people. But Joe was in that program, Small Town Tennis USA, and did a fantastic job with the kids. But this is what we need. We need to stimulate coaches to coach. We need to stimulate players to fall in love with the game. We need to give them a recipe or a map of how to get up the road. And then you've got to give them hope. And I just think we're falling short on all of those when we rely on country clubs or certified programs. We need things like this to stimulate our base.
Oh, and one of the other things that came out of that for us, I think, is there was a relationship. I'm a big relationship person. Joe came down and he formed a relationship with my kids. And while Joe was a better player, he was playing college tennis and he was a better player than they were right now. He was that next level, and my kids were kind of saying, hey, if Joe can play college tennis,
I can do this.
Maybe I can do this too. And, you know, it did give them hope. They knew that Joe had such a positive experience playing with you. And like I said, they weren't talking about it before, and now they're at least talking about it. It's entering their mind that, I might want to be a college tennis player, and they're starting to look at the positive attributes.
Yeah, and in general, we were hoping for 8 to 16 programs when we started this. And Dan said, well, maybe we try with 4. And I had it set up for 3, and then they bomb because of different reasons. You've got to get a community center that will hire the person and pay them, or you've got to get that part of it done, or it's logistics, or kids, the adventure becomes a job, and they realize it's tough and they don't want to do it. But these are all things you only learn when you set out and go after it. The beauty, I always talk about John Kennedy, and I was 11 years old when Alan Shepard flew for the first time into space. And I never will forget, Kennedy said, we will put a man on the moon by the end of this decade of the 1960s. And we did. And we didn't even have computers. Well, we had computers, but they had tubes. But what happened was we're going after this, they'd do 10 things wrong to get one thing right. And it's just like teaching. We're so afraid of making mistakes. We're so afraid we cookie cutter everything because we want the program, but that's not the way it works. There's lots of mistakes made. I mean, right now, we can do this program next year, and you'll be able to head off 50% of the mistakes. What are some of the biggest challenges? I've already alluded. You got to figure out a way to community center to hire these players and to get them some kind of pay. Room, board, and experience is what we used to say is the greatest pay, but kids nowadays don't want to work for room, board, and experience. They want a little bit. That's one of them. Getting people to welcome someone from the outside in the community is threatening in most times, but it's only a short period, so a lot of times that jumps that hurdle. What are some of the other challenges?
Well, you know, you've got to get somebody involved besides the high school coach. I think the high school coach is an important key there because obviously the high school coach knows who those players are that have the potential to play college tennis or he or she knows who the serious players are. So there has to be some coordination through the high school coach. But a lot of times the high school coaches are busy. They're working summer jobs or they have to do their own thing during the summer. So you need a community person that's willing to coordinate a recreation department or a school system that's on board with you, that's going to allow you to use courts, that's going to allow you to use space. Things like that have to be coordinated as well. One of the other things is you have to make sure that with the kid themselves, that you know they know what they're signing up for, that they understand what the conditions are.
Do you make it mandatory or not? Do you make it a privilege or do you make it something that's mandatory? What are your thoughts?
Well, the way, you know, my thoughts were you only involve your serious players for one thing. The kids that do have a dream of either playing college tennis or they are serious tennis players. And, you know, one of the criteria that I use for that, now we don't have a lot of opportunities to tournaments and everything else, but I kind of put it out there that this is for kids that are planning on playing at least a half dozen tournaments this coming year or have a dream of playing college tennis. It, you know, we originally talked about offering this as a way to promote high-level serious tennis in the small towns. And so you've got to get those kids that have that bug on
that's the hook.
Willing to do the work.
That's the bait, but in reality, if you're in Oconee County, South Carolina, Walhalla, and you don't have anybody to teach tennis there, maybe you do, and if somebody's teaching, forgive me, I know they've got nice courts there, but if you're in a small town like that and nobody teaches tennis and they want beginners taught, well, then it's a different
right.
formula.
Right.
But for your formula, a lot of your kids have already had beginning lessons. You needed a little bit more of a ramp up.
Right, and with this being the initial year that we're trying it, that's who – we felt
you
like it needed
to
be offered. When I talked to the community person,
it was also open to everybody, and it was also open everybody that wanted to. Okay.
And
you've got to find your niche. That's right.
And in the future, what I'd like it to be is that they come out just like they're a teaching pro, that they're working all day long. Maybe you offer a 3-hour session for serious players in the morning, and then you open up part of the afternoon, maybe to more of a beginner to intermediate level or something, because you still want to, if you don't have opportunity for exposure of tennis through beginning lessons and stuff, you've got to get the hook in the mouth. You've got to expose kids to it at some level, and that might be how you use it.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of thoughts about how I got into tennis. My sophomore year, I had a job. I made $2 an hour driving around and giving park lessons, and I went to 10 parks. Actually, I might have made $4. I think I got $80 a week for 40 hours. That's $2 an hour.
Wow.
Okay, but the bottom line is they paid for my gas. I drove my brother's little car around, and I went to 10 parks. And some of them were bombs. Others, I got a letter from or an email from a lady now, but this has just been 3 years ago, said back in the 60s I was at one of your park programs. That meant the world. But I remember the deal, I fell in love with the feeling you get when you teach. You have to have teachers. I get them. I've got so many things on my mind, but one of the biggest voids that we have in tennis, if somebody asked 30 years ago who are the biggest names in tennis, they'd say Harry Hopman, Vic Braden, Dennis Vandermeer, Nick Bollettieri, and Robert Lansdorf. And if somebody asked you today who are the biggest names in tennis, you would say Nick Bollettieri, Vic Braden, Robert Lansdorf, Dennis Vandermeer, or, you know, those and the people are still working. But the point is we're not grooming teachers. And we have all these seminars, and we have all the information, but for whatever reason, there are some good, great teachers out there. I'm not saying that. But the point is that we need to really look at how we are grooming the teachers. It's not with only methodology. It is not only with information. It's not only with the internet. You got to cut people loose when they're young and say, go take this hill, and realize they'll make a few mistakes. And that's what everybody's afraid of. Everybody's afraid of mistakes and liabilities, and everybody's afraid of mistakes. So you don't have apprentice programs. I guess that's what I'm saying. This is an apprentice program for as a coach, it's an apprentice program for my guys.
Right.
And
right.
for University of South Carolina, it's 7-8-9 guy, and for Georgia, it's 7-8-9 guy who love tennis.
Right, right. Well, and you know, you just talked and mentioned liabilities and everything else and those other concerns, and I probably shouldn't say this, but But truthfully, one of the things that we thought about is you don't want to advertise this too much because there's always that guy out there that's going to have a problem with it.
Oh.
And it's just a matter of those things, those types
of
bureaucracies get involved there, and that's what keeps the opportunities from coming to my kids. My kids are not going to get opportunities because everybody's worried about liability and everything else.
Oh, yeah, we can. It's as ridiculous. And I want to say this before we go to commercial. Ryan Young, very insightful, the assistant coach, South Carolina, and one of the favorites ever coached at Clemson, winningest player in the last 20 years or so there. But Ryan said, you know, tennis is sort of like if I wanted to be a whitewater canoe guy. And I went to the river, all excited about it with my canoe and stuff and ready to go. And they made me take a 3-week class first that was ridiculously hard, from how not to bump into trees with your canoe to this and this and this and this. And they made you do all this certification. And then finally they let me get into water and said, no, you got to stay in the holding pond area. You can't go into the rapids yet because you haven't got that certification yet. And he says, I wouldn't want to do whitewater canoeing. I wanted to do tennis because it was exciting and it's dangerous and it's thrilling and it's competitive. But we have dumbed down so much. We have gotten – a coach the other day said, you know, we've done a great job at keeping making referees happy like they're doing their job. And we got a lot of nice, polite kids. And it's boring as crud. And Coach, we got to go to commercial. We'll be right back with American Tennis and Chuck Creasy.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at ChuckCreasy.net. That's ChuckCreasy.net.
Making tennis players in America, and what better to place to make them than Small Town Tennis USA, and with a mentoring program that helps the coach learn. It brings hope and exhilaration and excitement to the youngsters, and it just basically provides a pathway from the arena, and I want everybody to know that 72% of all professional athletes do not come out of the inner cities. They come from Small Town Tennis USA. Beside the 72% of the athletes coach, the sleeping giant has always been high school tennis. 350,000 students. 350,000 students that should be students of the game. They're students who right now do an after-school activity. It's like band or after-school scuba dive. No, I shouldn't even say after school bingo class or something. It's like, and I'm making fun of it because what a sleeping giant, because only 23,000 kids, 23,000 go on to play five tournaments or more a year. I've met you earlier, and I've seen your kids over the period of time, and they are not just doing an after-school activity. They're playing a sport. Can you talk about the differences between most high school programs that are after-school activities and what it takes to make them a sport?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think it does begin with a coach. The successful programs that I've seen in rural southeast Georgia, the programs that have had success and that are competitive have a coach who gives a rip about their program. They're willing to do the things in the off season to provide opportunities for their kids in the summer. They'll take them to camps. They'll do their own trainings with them. They'll set up off season opportunities. They're willing to work with them. The schools where you have a coach that maybe they coach tennis, but they're really a football coach and they coach tennis as a second sport, or those are the programs that just don't seem to build. You've got to have somebody with passion and somebody with energy that's willing to put the time and the effort into providing those opportunities, or at least setting up the opportunity. And again, we're talking about those towns where the kids can't go down to the after school country club program, or there is no academy. There's no real local opportunities. You might have some guy that gives lessons every once in a while that used to play tennis a long time ago, but the coach has to be the one that cares. The high school coach is really the only one that has an interest a lot of times in developing players, because they want them to get better for their team, and then, of course, they want to develop their players, so they have college opportunities as well. So I think you have to have somebody who gives a rip.
Well, that's true, and our problem, of course, is, and I'm sad to say this, my 35th year in collegiate coaching, I've never been to a high school dual match in 35 years to recruit a player. And the reason being is that dual match tennis coach does not stimulate development. It stimulates participation. Tournaments stimulate development. I would like to see Camden County with seven other counties down there play a open format, maybe 128 draw, or eight times 48 draw would be beautiful, six players on each team, and then your number six guy might pop up and win the whole doggone thing.
Well, that's a great idea, Chuck, but it will never fly. And the reason is the bureaucracy that's involved, because the high school tennis associations have such control over us, and they tell us, they dictate what types of tournaments we can play, what types of, we can only do dual matches. We can't set up. I can't.
So they
bring in.
They want a participation activity. They don't want a competitive sport.
Well,
that's what you're telling me.
I have to follow the format. I'm allowed 18 dual matches. Well, I agree, but I can't take if this other school has four players who are rated at a certain level, and I've got three. We can't throw them all in the mix and have them play their own tournaments. We have to play them through the high school tournament, and that's another thing where the high school associations need to be changed. The USTA could have more of an influence there, maybe.
Well, they
aren't allowed to do those types.
You know, they got to get it and get it right. Look, in Texas, Coach, in Texas they do it and they do it well, and the kids get better. In Texas, they play team tournament for about 8 weeks. Team tennis, about 8 weeks in the fall, bang, it's over. Individual tournaments all spring long. The kids, after playing individual tournaments at high school tournaments, they springboard into the summer and they're on fire to play, and that's why Texas is one of the best states. Now, they'll argue that Georgia is one of the best states in the country, but it's really Atlanta area.
Right, right.
It's Atlanta. It's not Georgia.
Exactly. And you know, I'll I'll be honest here. You know, the format that we use in Georgia, we play three singles and two doubles, and you can't play both. And so really,
pathetic.
My doubles players, if they end up a doubles player, that's all.
Oh, yeah.
How do
you like to be that
there.
Number two doubles guy,
right.
Folks?
No chance.
That really excites me, and they probably play a pro set.
And my single players, my best players on my team.
Do they play a pro set? Do they play pro set?
Well, I don't. I don't. There's a lot of coaches.
Do they play no
ad? They have that option. I don't. It's kind of left up to the coaches. But in dual matches. Now, once we get to regions in the state tournament, we play regular two out of three sets. But you've got a lot of those coaches that are recreational coaches that just want to play a pro eight or play in
just get it over with.
Yep.
And it becomes an after-school activity, and that's the point. But it's a sleeping giant.
Right.
It's where all our talent is.
Well,
all our talents get dumbed down, Coach.
Well, plus our format doesn't help develop my singles players either because they're going to have to play doubles in college. But kids who go to high school in Georgia don't play high doubles because they've been the best players on their team, so they go to college and they don't know how to play.
Out all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good people to do nothing, and I'm going to put it on you to stand up and speak out. And I sort of led into this topic, but for about 10 minutes here, folks, I have got to give you the latest on this collegiate scoring calamity, accident waiting to happen, train wreck, complete train wreck of college tennis. So the short story, and then I'll give you the long story. The short story is the ITA is pushing through in the last 11 months a mandate to abbreviate the scoring system. And what do they want? Well, scoring system should do two things. It should be the best barometer or determiner of the better player. It should be an accurate barometer of the better player. Scoring system should not tilt it to where, hey, listen, you get more if you have a guy dunking the basketball versus shooting. Now, you do have three-pointers, so that might be the analogy, but let's say scoring system shouldn't be first half we play regular, but Peyton Manning should have gotten 9 points per passing touchdown in the second half of the ball game. So, we've got problems in college tennis, but the ITA's pushing through this mandate. We play no ad scoring, stop the sets at five, double sets to five, and it's laughable. Now, here's the last thing. We call this the bullwinkle system, that it's just a bad thing for, because results are skewed and it doesn't develop players. Those are the two main goals. But here's the other thing, Coach. They have this thing they call clinch. So if you're playing three doubles matches and you win the second doubles point, you stop that third one. You might be in a knockdown drag out, and they say, sorry, stop. So you say the team's up 1-0. Now you play singles, six singles. Well, if a team wins one, two, and three singles, your 4, 5, and 6 player do not get to finish. One of the teams last year, one of the top players in the country, he told me last week, he said, we have number 4 guy that always finished last, and we figured out in the ACC, and they were ACC champions, so you guys can figure out who this is. He said, we figured out his record would have been 2-1. Now, it's laughable, ridiculous, but the whole thought process is, oh, it's not exciting, fans don't want to stay. Well, two kinds of people come out. Fans come out, you know, the parents usually, people who love tennis, and both of those don't want to see abbreviation. Your normal sports fan will come out there based on time of the year, you know, season of the year, time of the match, and other reasons, but it's not for those things. But the MDTA's Men's Division I Tennis Association, I'm proud to be one of the people heading this up, as well as Randy Blumenthal, Gene Orlando, which we've had him on. We've had now Brian Boland, very active. We've had Josh Goffey sign on, Adam Herendeen from Presbyterian College, John Choboy, many, many well-thought and respected coaches. So when they're pushing this through, their agenda was pushed through, Coach, by a basically USTA sort of putting it on college tennis, like, look, we've got to make this more exciting. We've got to get some TV matches or something. And before I go any further, you could have your own TV format if you wanted to. Just don't screw the sport up. So a lot of coaches are outraged. So we sent out a letter this week, and we basically pointed out the facts that we're getting tremendous pushback. It's interesting how many, many coaches are now finally speaking up. They were sort of dumbed down. Basically, you believe that the people in charge have your best interests at heart. But the dumbing down of the sport cannot continue. We believe that way, as do many coaches. We conducted a poll after the NCAA tournament and went out. 65 voted against the ITA mandate, 11 for the ITA mandate. This all stemmed from the year 2012, when we had 32 teams at Athens and it rained, and it was a mess, to say the least. It was a circus atmosphere, and it was not good, and one of the NCAA officials said, look, this is not good. So instead of not having 32 teams, they need to have 8 or 16 at 32 teams, and they said, well, the format's too long. I mean, that's just the logic of that is not deep, as much as I could be kind there. The logic is wrong. So we had over 10,000 signatures rise up on an internet thing. An independent poll this last year, when teams were being forced the first 6 weeks, 1,348 student athletes said they did not like it in this independent poll. There was a poll taken by the ITA. 81% of the kids said, we don't want to play this in singles. 85% said they did not like it in doubles. These things are not talked about in the meetings. They basically have an agenda to try to push forward what's going on. So in anything that is fair in the democratic process, we should have at least a two-thirds majority when you change something of such great substance. So this ITA poll that they conducted themselves showed that they're way out of bounds here. The poll we conducted showed that they're way out of bounds. The voice of the student athletes say it's way out of bounds. 10,000 signatures say it's way out of bounds, but they're trying to do it anyway. So we sent out this letter to the NCAA Tennis Committee, and I'm going to just read it real quick. The men DTA is conducting an ongoing poll that shows these votes 65-11 against this. And then I go on to tell the other points. The disregard for the opinions of our student athletes contradicts also NCAA President Mark Emmert in a recent NCAA article where he says we must listen to the voices of student athletes. In normal instances, changes of such magnitude should take a two-third majority, and it should be well debated. In December 2013, which was brought up on the show as well, in 2013, December, there was a vote taken, 21-19, 21 votes for a different format, keeping regular scoring but cutting the sets a little shorter. And then there was a 19 vote to go to no ad for full sets. Well, that was a compromise for just 6 weeks. It was supposed to be an experiment. They threw both of those out and put in the Bullwinkle system, Coach, which it's unbelievable. Coaches lose their job. We had two high-profile coaches lose their jobs. I'm sure there were other reasons why, but a lot of teams took bad losses early and in the season because of the Bullwinkle system. So we're asking these questions to all of you here, and I'm going to get a few comments from Coach. Does the ITA have the power, the right, and the moral authority to force this drastic change on NCAA tennis without proper parliamentary procedure and at least a two-thirds vote? Coaches Association, they say they're more, maybe, but they're a coaches organization. Do they have this power, this authority, or is it just something the NCAA has sort of maybe just abdicated to them because nobody else wants to do it? We object wholeheartedly to the methods that the ITA has used in forcing through these. Number three, we strongly believe that the creation of the movement to change the scoring system does not solve the current problems at our NCAA championships, and it seriously adds to the problems in our traditional fall and spring season. We have a scheduling problem, not a format problem. The reality, Coach, is that 32 teams at Athens, they're trying to push all the men and women together and make it a great, big experience. And no other sport in the NCAA does this. It is a team sport. You have track and field. Men and women go together. I guess swimming, men and women go together. But basketball sure doesn't. Baseball and softball sure doesn't. Why they've forced this because of tennis is there has to be a reason why they're forcing that. By the way, putting both of them together was voted against by the men's coaches in 2005 at a meeting at the NCAA tournament, 51-2 against.
Wow.
51-2, and they did it anyway. We strongly suggest the fundamental changes in collegiate scoring system be stopped immediately to preserve the sport and our heritage. Number five, we request a meeting with your organization. We've asked this to the NCAA, and in conclusion, we said there is surely concern about the lack of relevance in the sport of college tennis. Our professional organizations, which are all well-respected, USGA, USTPTR, PTA, ITA, and MDTA are all deeply concerned about the lack of relevance in many aspects and for our student athletes. However, the overwhelming evidence shows that the coaches and players do not want a scoring change. The decline of our sport absolutely needs to be addressed on many fronts. However, the continuing focus on scoring formats does not help our cause enough, while it risks the risk that it's going to take on our sport is overwhelming. Meanwhile, we're continuing to lose opportunities to put our game on the highest plateaus. Real and much-needed solutions can be found without dismantling one of the most sacred heirlooms in our sport. And if you think it's not, folks, believe me, people say it's exciting. Excitement dwindles with each occurrence. Drama intensifies with each and every denial and every moment that goes by. Our sport is the chess. With this scoring system, no ad is checkers. Our scoring system is time-tested and great cornerstone of our sport around the world. The loss of relevance and the dropping of 400 teams is more complex than the simplistic explanations that have been continuously promoted. We're asking the NCAA committee to table this, and then we have to go forward. If you dumb down your scoring systems in the high school, Coach, you're dumbing down a sport. It's already dumbed down. I'm giving you a challenge. Nobody wants to play high school tennis when it's no ad scoring, it's a cheapened format, and it's an activity. So, therefore, we're not making players. It's that simple. I'm going to give you the last word.
When I look at a problem like this or I look to understand a problem like this, it always has helped me to simplify it to lowest terms, basically. And when I look at this problem, and you're talking about changing to no ad and shortening sets and everything else, I don't know a serious player I've ever had that likes to play no ad. I don't know a serious coach who is serious about developing his players that wants to play no ad, that wants to play short sets. It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
And it's the same. And those who are good coaches, but I want you to ask yourself this question. Scoring system should be two things. It should develop the player, especially at the younger years. It should get the hook in the mouth. No ad does not get the hook in the mouth. No ad does not stimulate the interest and the intensity of players. It's done for tournament directors and like that. The other thing is the best player needs the best opportunity on skill set to win, not because of scoring system. Coach Dan Volk, we have loved having you on today, and we'll have you back again real soon.
Thanks,
okay.
Chuck. Always.
Made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He got the red, white, blue, flying high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his Simpsons. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of his USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't president. He's just America. Made in America. Made in America.
This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and I'm reminding you each and every week that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and has very little to do with a win or a loss. Folks, fight the fight of not dumbing down our sport. Honor the sport, and it will honor us. It's not set up shallowness, a lack of creativity, and to just be an activity. It is the greatest stimulation of young people's minds and bodies and hearts that we could ever come up with. That's our goal. And thanks to Coach Dan Vaughn, check out Camden County, Georgia, folks. That's where it's happening. See you next week.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.